people think that the world is in chaos. People think that the world is on fire right now, for all the wrong reasons. I think that's partly because of how we consume information, but also because there is a segment of politicians who try to scare us to death, because then we clamor for safety. We need the strong man, in a way.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Johan Norberg. He's a Swedish economist and social theorist, and his most recent book is Progress. In Progress, I mean, you lay out an absolutely convincing case that most things are getting much, much better. What are the things that are getting better, and what's guiding that kind of progress?
Well, basically, the world is getting better. Society, economy, culture, politics is not getting better. So it's really a book about how I get depressed too, all the time, especially when I follow the news about what politicians do and how they try to stifle liberty. This is a book about what people do, what mankind does when we have freedom to explore strange new ideas and exchange the results. And then what we see is, like, I mean, in the last 25 years, in the 25 years that have been considered as sort of neoliberalism, capitalism run amok, what has happened? Well, we've reduced chronic undernourishment around the world by 40%, child mortality and illiteracy by half, and extreme poverty from 37 to 10%. So every minute that we're talking, 100 people rise out of poverty.
Now, you said, though, that, you know, politics is not getting better, and there's a lot of reason to believe that. Certainly in Europe, we're seeing, from a libertarian point of view, we're seeing a rise of nativist, kind of xenophobic groups, a kind of turn to a fascist right, which is also kind of a fascist left in countries as varied as Hungary and Italy and France. What's going on with that, and how is it connected to these other improvements?
Yeah, in a way, I wrote this book not because I'm happy about the world, but because I'm terrified about what's going on. Because people think that the world is in chaos. People think that the world is on fire right now, for all the wrong reasons. I think that's partly because of how we consume information, but also because there is a segment of politicians who try to scare us to death, because then we clamor for safety. We need the strong man, in a way. So I think that people who are afraid, they aren't tolerant. They aren't liberal. They don't accept people moving across borders, trade going on an international scale.
But what are they afraid of? And the book is fantastic, and we've talked about it in the past, but if a lifespan, like your grandparents' lifespan at birth was 30, and you're living to be 71, why would you be susceptible to somebody saying, oh, everything's getting fucked up? Why are people suckers for tales that say, circuit breaker from a complete collapse of society?
Yeah, it does surprise me too. But in a way, I think it's because we have so much to lose. We now have this comfortable lifestyle. But the world seems a bit strange. We don't understand really what's going on. And I think it's partly two sides of the same coin. Because people who live comfortable lives, they only think about what they've got to lose. When I go to Vietnam, when I go to China, when I go to India, I meet optimistic people who think about all the new business models, technologies that can improve their lives. When I go to the US and Europe, people are so depressed and so scared about what's going on. And then they're following the news, and then they see, they don't notice that homicide has been halved in 20 years. They notice one serial murderer on the loose somewhere.
Right.
And then with social media, we see it all the time. Combine that with terrorism, the financial crisis, and a new geopolitical situation. People are confused. And when they're confused, they're scared, and they want a strong man who gives them the answers.
Well, I think your book goes a long way to explaining and painting. And it's not what is now in America known as alternative facts. It's the actual facts. But I was thinking while you were talking about Donald Trump is obviously a master of injecting a negative, pessimistic narrative in which the only solution is him as the great man coming in and solve everything. And it was fascinating that after decades of declines in crime and violent crime, property crime, every sort of crime, and there have been some minor upticks in the past couple of years, and it's not clear if it's a trend yet, but he was able to campaign on being a law and order candidate, which was the type of candidate you had in the late 60s and early 70s when crime actually was rapidly growing and it was ubiquitous, particularly in cities. But then I guess the question is, why would anybody buy that? Because it's, you know in your own life that you're walking around. a city like Washington, D.C., even 20 years ago, there were large, large parts of it you just couldn't walk around in. And now it's, you know, people have, you know, gourmet dog biscuit stores in places that you would have bought crack in. It ends up, is that what the role that politics is playing now? It kind of feeds off the success that's happening outside of politics or beyond politics, and then it's trying to pull it into its orbit.
Well, in a way, we discovered, if you go back to the Industrial Revolution, that was the moment in history when we discovered poverty, when we discovered child labor, and began to complain about those things and asking politicians, why can't you deal with those things? Not because those things increased, but for the first time, they actually decreased. So people began to think that I can live a decent, comfortable life. So if there are problems like that, it's somebody's fault. It's a huge problem that we have to deal with. I think that's going on with things like crime as well. When you take it for granted, it's like you have to live your life and you just get on with it. Now it's an exception, and then you want someone to be in charge of it and deal with it. And that's the appeal of populism. They can give you all those pie-in-the-sky things. We'll deal with that
as well. And you would agree that something similar, it might not be exactly the same, but something similar is showing up in Europe as well, and that it's not an accident that it's in relatively wealthy countries that we see this.
That's right. It's a kind of collapse anxiety
right.
when you have a good life.
And it's kind of a luxury good, right? In the sense that poor yeah. countries don't quite, you know, they can't afford to be deluding themselves.
The old saying is, if you don't have food, you have one problem. If you have food, you have thousands of problems.
Right. I've never heard that saying before, but I'm gonna use it for the rest of my day, at least the rest of my life.
Perhaps I invented it.
Because we're at the Students for Liberty conference, which brings 2,000 students from all over the world who are interested in kind of classical liberal and libertarian ideas. Where do you find them, or when you talk to young people, or do young people have a good grasp of the history that is necessary to contextualize current problems to move towards a more libertarian future? Are they pessimistic?
I really think that children are our future.
Now that I've heard before.
Yeah. That's the old saying.
Yeah. And
definitely when it comes to trusting politicians, because no one trusts politicians. Everybody hates what's going on in Washington or Brussels. But there is more of a tendency among an older core to think that, oh, all those politicians failed, so let's just elect an even stronger guy who can solve these problems with an even bigger solution. Whereas I find more of cynicism when it comes to that among the young, mm-hmm. partly because they've seen how technology and their own ways of organizing solutions to their problem is something that's being done voluntarily in society rather than through politics. And when you look at this rise of populism around Europe and the U.S., most of the voters are the old ones. It's the old baby boomers who are now retiring and thinking that there must have been a good old days when I was young. And Donald Trump speaks to that. He tells you that, look, we can go back to the when America was great, back to the 50s and so on. I don't see that in the younger generation, and they don't vote for the populists as much as their parents do.
Is cynicism, is that dangerous, though? Because does it harden people and make them disengage, not just in politics, which would be one thing, but do they disengage from kind of people like Peter Thiel have talked about this, from creating the future, you know, that maybe they become complacent and they think the future will just take place on its own and they won't be as active a player in that?
I don't see that. I see the strongest tendency is that they go ahead and solve problems. Younger generations see as many problems as
right.
older people do, but they've got an app for it.
Yeah.
They are used to another way of dealing with things. It's not trying to work through a political system and then becoming disappointed when nothing happens because other people have other priorities and then you want the strong man to just solve the problem. They are used to doing it another way. It's consumer society and producer society. They do things. That's at least the major tendency.
So instead of arguing in front of the taxi commission to increase the number of cars on the road at any one point, they create Uber.
Quite right.
Okay. Well, we will leave it there. I think that's a great note to end it on. Thank you, Johan. We've been talking with Cato Institute's Johan Norberg. He's an author and social theorist. His most recent book is Progress, at the International Students for Liberty Conference. Thanks so much for talking, Johan.
Thank you.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.